This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Well, welcome, everyone, Jikoji on this beautiful spring morning. So happy you could all come and be here. And so, today I've been thinking about, actually not just today, but I've been thinking about our voices. So I'd like to talk a little bit about our voices today. I've been thinking about how powerful they are and how much they can help us remember who we are, who we really are, and most deeply and truly, and the choices we have. So kind of as a way of leading into we use our voices so automatically, and we think, well, we can talk and normal conversation and it's a great gift, human language. It's a very mysterious thing. If could use this analogy, it's a bit like meditation sitting practice itself. We're given this gift of language, as babies, really. We're set up kind of in our structure evolutionarily to be aware and sensitive in our hearing, so that we can take in others' voices and learn what it is to have a voice language. So often we also have these voices in our heads. We have thoughts, which are kind of an interesting thing in themselves, this sort of silent voice, but often images go with it, but language and image are very closely associated, just like our eyes and our ears are closely associated in our heads and all close to the central processing system, if you will. So, but we have this tendency to sort of separate ourselves from ourselves. And that's also kind of natural too, because we're set up in kind of a dual way with ears and eyes and nose, you know. It's a lot of this, where the processing comes through, is kind of bifurcated, separated out. And we do have this separate body, and yet it's the same body that everyone else has, and truly in that way that we're all born, and we will all leave this life. So the separation can play out in a lot of ways, and often it does through our emotions, which could be anger or sadness or any emotion that come, even excessive excitement or joy, the quality of emotion, which is our body-mind together. And we all have emotions, and they're helpful to us, and they're good. We have this tendency, though, to kind of make our emotions the center of everything in our life, and we don't really have to do that. In fact, that's what keeps us from realizing who we really are and truly are most deeply, and also our connection with others. When we think our emotions are so important, though, we have all of our reasons for getting angry or not liking this person, or being sad or upset, or being, you know, sort of hyper enthusiastic about things, so that we kind of go off the rails enthusiastic. So we tend to hold on to this, and there are many ways that Buddhism has looked at how not to hold on, but the most central teaching, in my understanding, is nothing is worth holding on to, especially in reference to ourselves. But anything, everything changes all the time so quickly, and as we've had recent experience, just with the pandemic itself, all of a sudden things have changed, and they keep changing. So there's, we kind of know that there's nothing to hold on to, that it's all changing, but we still have this tendency to want to hold on and cling to things. I kind of like the analogy that it's just, it's like the weather, all these emotional states and thoughts, and just, they just comes through, you know, the rains come through, the clouds, the storms even, the lightning, the thunder, or the mild, beautiful days. It's all, it's passing through, so there's no reason that we really need to hold on to it. But we also are set up so that we kind of want to solidify around things. What helps us not solidify is, in this tradition, particularly in Zen, just sitting down, simply sitting, can release us of this tendency to grip and hold on, which we can actually feel in our bodies once we become sensitive to it. We can feel this tension in the body, that holding on. So sometimes being aware is being aware of these thoughts and feelings and sights and sounds, everything that comes through our senses, moving through, being aware is enough to allow us to let go. And that's what meditation is, in a sense, of being really with just whatever is occurring in this moment. In our lives or in our meditation, but the meditation allows us to slow down enough so that we can just be with our breath and see how much life is in that and in us, that we are not in control of. The breath comes and goes in its own way according to many different factors. It's part of our autonomic nervous system, for one thing, our autonomic systems. We have many of them that we, our little selves, are not in control of. So meditation helps us come together, zazen, just simply sitting, walking slowly with our breathing, feeling what it is to be an embodied being and to be alive and on this planet subject to gravity, which holds us and supports us and keeps us here. And what it means to feel all of the many sensations that comes to us. And then also to feel and sense in some way that's really hard to talk about. Language it can't really cover everything, because some things are sort of so large in a way. Once again, these are all just metaphors. They're so large that they're boundless. It's hard to put, when you use a big abstract word like that, it doesn't perhaps say much, but it gives an idea of how big everything is and how we are part of that big everything when we don't condense ourselves to be this small little self. So one of Shakyamuni Buddha's radical insights was that we don't have to separate our minds and our hearts from ourselves. And in fact, we are always all together. So Shakyamuni Buddha was the Buddha that our Buddha ancestor, we say. There were other Buddhas before him, and according to Buddhist teaching, there will be other Buddhas after. But he's the one that we kind of look to for a lot of insight into how to live our lives. And then as we chant it today with all the ancestors that come from India through China, through spread throughout the world to Japan, to Korea, and here we are. So his insight is that we're really all together, and that's our Buddha nature. So remembering that we ourselves are Buddha is what we practice to do. There's not a difference. It's not like that's out there and it's a statue on the altar. That's a representation or a symbol, but that's each of us has that quality as well. So we practice tuning into that quality. So there are other practices in Soto Zen and that we do to remember this deep nature of wisdom and compassion. There are many words again that you can use to say, well, to call out, to describe Buddha nature. What is that? What does that mean? Does that mean being enlightened? It really means being at one with ourselves and allowing our wisdom and compassion to be present for ourselves and for everyone else and everything else in the world. So the central practice we do is sitting down, allowing ourselves to just get to know ourselves and feel this nature inside ourselves and all through every cell, really. But we also bow to everything and everyone. We do a lot of bowing in Zen, and especially if you're a newcomer, you may have noticed that and pick up a little bit, like how many bows and which direction and all of that. Those are all kind of like Thich Nhat Hanh's mindfulness bell. They're all just a way to bring us back to remember, oh, we're here, we're doing this now. We're bowing to our cushion, we're bowing to the group. And we also chant, and that's using our voices. So we did some chanting today at the service, and then we did a little chant at the beginning of this talk. So to remember that words have contexts in when we are gathered here, the words have a context of we are of our motivation to be here with an open and fresh mind and to bring our curiosity. What is this? What is this practice? What is this Zen temple up there, Jikoji? What are they doing up there? Coming together, integrating. So we bring our openness and freshness. So the chants are, there are many chants. We have our little chant books that have, a good representation, and there are many more. But the voice is when we take our own voice, then we really do feel how we can express, what's true for ourselves in a kind and way that we ourselves can hear it and that other people can hear it. So this is the chanting is a wonderful practice, I think. At different times, I myself and others I know who do this practice find a certain chants really resonate with them. So I do them at home. There's a full moon chant, and By the way, tonight is a super blood full full eclipse, so don't miss that because it's going to be everywhere in North America. Rarely that we can see it, not waiting up till 2 o'clock in the morning. So that's part of being everything too. We're part of that moon. That's controlling the rhythms of the tides and time in a way. So the full moon chant. And then we chanted the one version of the Heart Sutra, and another, and a version of the Great Friendliness Sutta, the Metta Sutra. But I'd like to focus just on this short chant today, which we don't chant a lot here, or in my experience, I haven't heard it a lot. But sometimes it's helpful to me, especially if things are a little unsettled in my life or difficult, and then to have a practice of just chanting something, hearing your voice aloud. So it's setting an intention in a way, but that can be very abstract to set an intention to. I'm gonna get up and meditate before I go to work, just for example. So and that can work. Intention can be very strong, but sometimes it helps to hear the actual resonance of your own voice, because that enters your body and your mind in a different way than if you're just talking words out loud in your mind, if you're just saying words to yourself in your mind. So this chant is the Kanzeon, or veneration to Kanon. There are many translations of it. It's also called the Enmai Juku Kanon Gyo. And it's very short. It's chanted usually 9 times, sometimes 3 times. It depends on what the temple has decided is the right number of times. It can be chanted 108 times too. It's quite short. And in Japanese, I will chant it as best I can in Japanese, and then also read one of the translations that that I like. So the chant can have this, with the voice aloud, can have this very strong effect of really bringing ourselves to our day and the end of our day particularly. And this is often when this is chanted, at the beginning of the day and the end of the day. So I have that chant. So, Enmai Juku Kanon Gyo Kanzeon Nabutsu Yobutsu Uin Yobutsu Uin Bupo Poso En Jo Rakuga Jo Chonen Kanzeon Bonen Kanzeon Nen Ju Shin Ki Nen Nen Fu Ri Shin. So that's the Japanese version of it. Oh. And there are many nice translations, but I like this one currently anyway. Sometimes it changes. Great open compassion itself, with gratitude for our collective true nature. True nature is my already present home. True nature is nourished by my activity. The triple treasure is my foundation, finding great joy in ease and pure motivation. In the morning, my first impulse of mind and heart is compassion. In the evening, my last impulse of mind and heart is compassion. Present moment awareness arises within big mind. Present moment awareness is expressed within big mind. So, that chant is a reminder for me and for others. Think of four basic things. The first is that we're inseparably connected to all things in everywhere in the whole universe. And second, and maybe really important, that we can directly experience our true nature. We have that capacity. That's the assured promise of Buddhism. From Shakyamuni Buddha himself, he said, everyone has this. It doesn't mean everyone will express it, but everyone has this capability, no matter what difficulties they have, no matter what station of life they're in, no matter what impediments, physical or mental, they have, no matter what acts they've committed, horrific acts or wonderful acts, everyone has this capability. It's recognizing and remembering it. So this Kanon or Kanzeon is the female form of the Buddha, or perhaps the she, he, the trans form maybe, or the Bodhisattva who appears either in whatever form is the right form for the circumstance. Of this is the expressing the wisdom and compassion in the world, in our lives. How can we be with people kindly? How can we be with ourselves kindly? So this Kanon or Kanzeon, also the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara. So she, like us, has, according to the Buddhist stories, has directly, she had that capability. And also, perhaps unlike us, she went further and experienced that true nature. So the third thing that this chant reminds us of and me of is we should keep our eyes open to act with this wisdom and compassion throughout the whole day. So, and last is that our energy, the energy of this contemplative practice, just sitting and also chanting, has a ripple effect. It spreads everywhere. We may not see that, we may not know it, we may not even believe it, but that is a reminder that we could possibly be aware of that in this chant. So, as our founding teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, put it, he actually gave many talks about these four qualities of being free, of being wise, compassionate, and we each have that capability, and our influence spreads, and the present moment is where we find this. And for the second one, experiencing directly our human Buddha nature, awake nature, really, Buddha simply means awake one. He counseled that we could incline our minds, our heart mind, really, because they're not separate, toward the emptiness of what we may experience in ourselves and see in the world, of greed or hatred or delusion. And he called that the liberation of mind through not clinging. So, as I said earlier, like not fixing around, solidifying the sense of anything about ourselves, just being with everything and letting it flow through. But sometimes it's very difficult to keep our awareness open and to keep flowing moment after moment. Shakyamuni Buddha also talked about that. He said it's sometimes difficult. So we do have these practices that can support us and help us. So sometimes chanting something like the Kanzeon or the Heart or Metta Sutras can really help us keep steady in these weathers of our small self and also of the world around us. It's not easy sometimes to be steady with everything that's going on. Because when we chant with our own voice, that's a really stronger, much level stronger power than reading or even listening to talks or others or podcasts. So I'd like to touch end with a poem. A lot of what language can do does it best in the form of poetry. And this touches on the third reminder of in the end, my Juku Kanon, the reminder that we always have opportunities to choose openness and compassion and to embody openness, compassion, and wisdom, even in our everyday lives, maybe especially in our everyday lives, because we're not on the cushion all the time. The poem is called Hold Everything Dear, and it's by Gareth Evans. So it's quite a long poem, but I'll read the beginning and the end, which have a really nice flow, I think. Hold everything dear as the brick of the afternoon stores the rose heat of the journey, as the rose buds a green room to breathe and blossoms like the wind, as the thinning birches whisper their silver stories of the wind to the urgent of the trucks. As the leaves of the hedge store the light that the moment thought it had lost. Hold everything dear, the words, the bread, the child who reaches for the truths beyond the door, the yearning to begin again together, animals keen inside the parliament of the world, the people in the room, the people in the street, the people, hold everything dear. So I thank you very much for your attention this morning, and I'm always happy to hear what you might have to offer, whether you're with us online from here and there, and thank you all for joining. Very much, and Jackie, online Jackie.
I would like to know more about the canon. And I wonder if you can refer me to a source where I could read it and read about it.
Well, the one that I like, you can always Google, and my Juku Kanon Gyo, but the one I like came from the Santa Cruz Zen Center. Actually, Jean Bush translated that, so they have a little bit of that on there. And yeah,
thank you.
You're welcome. And I will have to say that it's my ignorance. I don't know a lot about it either, but I just found it at a certain point helpful to me. So that's I'm not particularly a scholar, or maybe not at all a scholar, but I hope that will help you some, Jackie. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ogun.
Thank you, Carolyn. I jotted down one that really caught my ear, and I wanted to hear a bit more about it. I think it was in the translation of it, and I was present moment awareness. There were two things about present moment awareness. Could you read those again?
Surely. Present moment awareness arises within big mind. Present moment awareness is expressed within big mind. So for me, that those two phrases kind of can bring together the present moment is where we really know what's going on, and also the big mind is all of us together and everything else at the same, so that we know ourselves and everything else, and it arises within this big mind, and it also implies action to me. We also act with kindness, with whatever wisdom is necessary or that we can see. So it doesn't mean that because we have big mind and present moment awareness that we're perfect and all seeing and all knowing, but where we each are, we have that. But I'm not sure if that's helpful, but I hope so.
Thank you, very helpful.
There's probably a source of Soto Zen chants on the web somewhere, if you wanted to look. I know that many separate centers have their chant books transcribed onto the web. So you can find out a lot that way if you want to do that kind of looking up. Rain.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So this morning when I woke up, I was trying on different clothes to come and zazen, and I noticed this one shirt I had a hole in it. So I got out the needle and thread, and I started chanting Namakiyabutsu. Uh-huh. And that's also a Jean Bush. Or is it true with all sewing? Is that what students do? It took me 36 hours to sew this rakusu, and the whole time I had to chant Namakiyabutsu. Of course, you don't do it out loud in the group, but... So that was kind of fun this morning.
Thank you. That's great. So what Rain is referring to, she has the mini version of this robe. It's called a rakusu, and in this practice, you sew that. Your teacher invites you to sew that, or you and your teacher work it out, and every time you take a stitch, you hand sew it. You do a little series of putting the needle in and bringing the needle out and moving on to the next place. Name Kie Butsu. So you're invoking the name of Buddha. What my teacher, the translation she used was plunging into the body of Buddha, which is Name Kie Butsu, Name Kie Butsu. And once you chant those, they get in your head. And so then it's just, again, a reminder of how our Buddha. This is who we are. We're Buddha too. Sometimes it's just hard for us to believe that. Thank you for that lovely story. Chuck.
Which is more important, to sit zazen every day or to study the Dharma every day?
it's It's more important to sit zazen. It's more important to sit zazen. And then if there's time, it's lovely to study the Dharma. But actually, I found this to be true for myself, that a lot of study doesn't take root, Dharma study doesn't take root unless you do sit. It doesn't sink in because we're so conditioned and trained in our culture, and all literate cultures really have this of like studying, and it goes in a certain way. But that's the thing, the language has different levels, and that's one thing about the voice aloud, that's another level of it, of really feeling it and getting that we are Avalokiteshvara, which we will chant at the end, by the way, at the end of the talk. We'll all chant that together too. We'll take the vow as Kanzeon did, to Kanon did, to be with all things, to save all things, which is really saving ourselves from ourselves. So I would say, yes, sitting, and then that opens up the study. So preferably in that order, the sitting first in the morning or whatever. Thank you, Chuck.
If that makes sense, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's a very beautiful question. It's thank you for being here for the first time. It's you bring the freshness to it, and we are curious. A lot of people, maybe others are here for the first time, you know, they bring and others are here for the 10,000th time, but we're still here because we're bringing our, you know, because it's big. And so how do we do this? Well, sitting, so it's kind of following on Chuck's question, just sitting does it by itself. So in a way, we come from such a culture of controlling, but actually what we're learning to do is just relax into being, to, as our direct teacher Dogen Zenji from Japan, 8th century, said, you know, the ease and joy of zazen, of just sitting. So learning to be with our bodies, letting our bodies settle into our bones and let gravity support us. And so it's a balance, because we do have to control certain things in our lives, certainly. It's not like we just throw everything out. It's learning how to be with both. And decisions will need to be made. Priorities will need to be set. So I remember like first starting to sit meditation. Well, I had to get up earlier, you know, and I am not a little bird who gets up at, you know, 4 a.m. voluntarily, right? But so make some choice. But I had to get up earlier because I was really curious and, you know, was drawn to this practice. So, and then it, just the sitting is the important thing. Also, sitting with others is a big help. If you can find a place near you that does this practice, come up here once a week, or you can come up anytime. Oh, really, it's open. It's always open. A very open place, Chikoji. Thank you for that question. Randy, good to see you.
Good to see you. A question that came up my head as you're talking about the our interconnection, our connectedness and whatnot. And on one level, it is a mental concept, but there's moments in life, I just call them slaps in the face, where they sort of hit me unexpectedly. in weird place. The last time I was driving up Highway 99 between Lodi and Stockton, you know, and I just, bammo, I just had this feeling I'm connected to all this shitty freeway, these cars, this, you know, but it never sticks around. I mean, those insights or those feelings, they have an impermanence too, it seems, and you know, if I had nicer ones by looking at birds or something like that, but this one just recently hit me, and just out of the blue, it just came, and then it stays with me for a while. I do what I do. I go on with my life and do what I was going up there to do in Lodi. And but yeah, I'm just curious about. I don't know if I'm trying to grasp on to that or just, you know, because it's a moment that's like all moments, I guess. It has a certain impermanence to it, or I don't know what how to put it, but it, maybe you could give me a little insight into this kind of experience in terms of how to wrap myself around it, and I don't know what I'm saying, but makes sense what I'm saying, or.
Thank you, Randy. Yeah, it absolutely makes sense to me. It's one of the big questions about the experiences of that come to one when one meditates regularly, when one sits zazen, and in fact, lots of people have written lots about it and talked lots about it. People would call it awakening or kensho or or satori or enlightenment, or so these moments of slaps in the face, right?
Or small.
Like that. Just hit me upside the head. So I think you do have the insight already. These states are impermanent. And so Shakyamuni Buddha maybe put it the best and the most succinctly. And I will quote him as according to my memory. But you had the insight. These states also are impermanent. However, they color your actions in the world. It does make a difference how we act, depending on how we, you know, so they color that. They don't guarantee anything, and they don't stay forever, but they do incline the mind, and that's what Shakyamuni Buddha said. Let's see, I think I have this. So, yeah, inclining the mind to liberation, Shakyamuni Buddha talked about, to being free, in other words, or being awake to everything, being free of our small self and being awake to everything that's around us. And so he said a couple of things. Unshakable deliverance of mind is empty of greed, hatred, and delusion. So we are not in those states when we're, you know, angry or wanting, desiring something or pushing something away or just don't know what's going on. We're not in those states. And he also said later on in the Majjhima Nikaya, he said, nothing whatsoever is worth clinging to, including, you know, the whole, including all the Buddha's teachings. So, just keep sitting. That's what our the gift of the practice that we do is, just keep doing it. Thank you very much for that question.
I mean, just out of curiosity, if you don't mind sharing, like, what made you got into meditation?
Well, I'll try to keep the story brief because I'm, you know, I've lived a fair number of years, and so there are a lot of things that are in play. I've always been curious about the quiet, and as a child, I would just go out into nature and sit quietly by myself and just listen to the birds or watch little creatures move around on the ground, or just fascinated by that. But and then through many different studies as a young adult and many different, you know, practices, I came to Buddha's practice, and I said, well, I haven't really tried this one, but I think I'm leading too much with my mind. So that was my little insight. And then I'll do this practice of just sitting down and not trying to figure things out and think too much with my thinking mind, not trying to understand this whole mystery of the world. So then once I sat down, I said, well, I was encouraged by someone. I reached out to a teacher, and I was encouraged to just try the sitting. So I said I would do that. And actually, we have another person ask this question about Jess here. It's like, well, who likes to study and read about things and Dharma practice? Dharma, what is the Dharma? What is it? It's huge and it's wonderful to read about. But don't read anything. Don't try to get what it is. Just sit down and do it. Just sit down and let quiet your mind, quiet your body, let them come together. So that's in brief how I got to sitting. Thank you for the question. And I heard the lunch bell, and those of you who are maybe new to this practice, you know, some people are. So the cook in a Zen temple is considered more important than anyone else, right? Including the teachers. So when the cook rings the lunch bell, then we show our respect by getting up and quietly going to eat the lunch that the cook and his, I think he has helpers today, has prepared for us. So I thank you all very much for your participation, and those who are here online and those many who are here today. And we have.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.